Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, I have with me another guest, with it being Wednesday, and we have Vicky, who is one of the patrons of the show, for which I am eternally grateful. But she's also a super active member of our Facebook group, and she's here to talk to us today all about sort of raising meat on a micro holding. If you don't have room for pigs or things like that, if you're not as fortunate as I am with the amount of space you have, there are some other options for raising your own meat, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Welcome to the show, Vicky.
Thank you very much, Carl, and yes, thank you for all of the content that you provide. It's been absolutely inspirational and life-changing. So
thank you for saying. So Vicky, perhaps you could start by spending a minute just telling everyone how it is you came to be talking to us today about the idea of becoming self-sufficient in meat on a micro holding.
Yes, it's not something that I thought I'd be doing probably a couple of years ago. I grew up in a big garden, lovely thatched cottage, half an acre, and we had ducks and geese, and they were absolutely just for the eggs and pets and the breed germs, and it was all I was very much into keeping animals, and my mum thought I would end up having an animal sanctuary when I grew up. So she's a bit surprised it's gone down the line it has. But there you go. It was pretty standard life. Went off to uni, met my husband, got a house, had kids. So I had an idea that it would be nice one day to have a small holding with lots of land and have animals as pets. And I realised you can't just dream; you have to actually make a plan. So I decided that this is going to happen in my future. What can I do to start learning or putting steps into action now to prepare for it and to maintain motivation? So I joined a group for small holdings, and when I said hello, I said I'm just here to kind of observe what smallholding life is like and learn from you guys by watching. And one of them said, think outside the box. There's probably a lot more than you could be doing that you haven't really thought about. Start by getting an allotment. So, yes, my kids were still quite young, and I had liked the idea of an allotment, but I thought, well, it's going to be difficult with them being young. But I thought, no, we'll do it anyway. So I got an allotment, and we made a start, and we got the chickens. And that was brilliant. And one of the other allotment holders kept quail, and he had an incubator. So I ended up getting a bunch of day-old chicks from him and started on quail, and that was brilliant. So in our first year, we'd got chickens and quail. And we weren't allowed quail on the allotment. They're not in the agreement. So they were at home. And as what happens when you hatch out or have someone hatch out for you, you get a lot of cockbirds. And yes, they got noisy because there was quite a lot of them and they were competing against each other. And the neighbours became displeased, shall we say.
Right.
They're only little birds, but their voices can carry when they really get going.
Yeah.
So he approached me and basically said, "This has got to stop. I can't sleep." So yeah, I knew that I had to do the hard thing and cull them.
So was your original plan with the quail to get them for eggs?
It was, yes. Right. I hadn't really planned on having them as meat at that point. It's probably something I hadn't particularly thought through.
Yeah, yeah.
All really well, as you don't. But yeah, so I hadn't really planned on them being for meat. But five of them ended up going down that route.
Yeah.
And it was not easy. And I cried a lot.
Yeah, emotionally not easy.
Emotionally not easy. Physically very easily. They're very small birds, and they are very easy to handle and process. And I watched some videos to research how to do it properly in the best ways, and what to do with them afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it was very hard. Mm-hmm. But I got it done, and I felt very pleased with myself afterwards that I had done it, and then had my first taste of meat that I'd reared myself, and that was a weird experience, because as I was eating it, I was remembering its whole life. I was remembering when we got it home as a little chick and how cute it was, and all through growing up, and I've never eaten meat more mindfully in my life.
Yeah, I can completely feel what you're saying. Yeah, it makes sense.
So yeah, that was my my first experience, and I think that spurred me on to I can do this. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I then looked into getting a meat breed of duck, and they were going to be dual purpose for meat and eggs, and I chose the big fat white ones, what everyone calls ours breeds, but they're mostly crossed with lots of other things.
Yeah.
So Pekings and Cherry Valleys, they all look the same, and they've all been interbred. So
sure.
You never know what you're getting. They are dual purpose birds.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that was one of our lockdown activities, was first incubator, getting some eggs. We actually, when we got the incubator, it came with six chicken eggs. So our first hatch out was four successfully hatched. So we ended up with two girls and a boy from that hatch out. And the ladies have joined our flock, as did the boy, on a basis.
Yeah.
He's currently locked in the shed because he was cockadoodling when I came out here, because I'm at the allotment now.
But
we are not allowed cockerels at the allotment either, so he's absolutely on borrowed time. He's over a year old now, and I think he's had a lovely life.
Yeah, had a good run.
Yes, the children loved him, and all of our hens are named, and the new hens got named and allocated to whose bird they were.
Mm-hmm.
And my son picked the one that turned into the cockerel as his bird. So that was quite tricky, because he loved this cockerel up to the point where it started chasing him and kicking him.
Yeah.
And it's now growing spurs because he's maturing, and frankly, now he's getting dangerous. So I was meant to deal with him this week, but the kids wanted to say, we forgot to do a goodbye before they went off to their, grandparents. So he's
sure.
He's still with us.
Yeah.
But bless them. I have ended up culling one cockerel that was actually someone else's on the allotment. They didn't want to cull it, is one they hatched, and they passed him over to me to deal with.
Yeah.
So
I get that quite a lot.
I bet, yes.
Yeah.
So he that's the only chicken I've actually processed. So after we hatched out the chicks, we then went for the ducklings. Managed to hatch out four ducklings in our first batch, and then we did another batch of quite a few more. So we had quite a lot of ducks at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, moving from quail to ducks was quite an emotional jump as well.
Okay.
Just a much bigger bird to deal with.
Yeah.
The techniques are slightly different, and that certainly needed a lot of psyching up to get that job done. And I've done a few ducks now, and we've hatched out some ducks for the table this year, although the fertilisation wasn't brilliant, so we only got one duckling. So I had to buy in two more ducklings to be friends
keep it
with
company. Yeah,
and I couldn't get Owlsbury's, so I've ended up with not meat birds, and they're very pretty, and that's going to make it even harder when they have to go.
Yeah.
But it was more important that he had a friend.
Yeah, of course.
So yes. But yes, then I liked the idea of meat rabbits as well. And I got the opportunity to take on an additional three allotments that had been abandoned for a lot of years. And one of them came with quite a substantial bank of sheds, which was an old pigeon loft. And I put a proposal into the council to say that I would like this old pigeon loft to raise rabbits in. And they agreed. So I got the extra space and got some three young rabbits to bring home and breed. And
perfect.
That was a whole new adventure.
Two females and a male, I hope.
It was, yes. totally on the trust of the breeder that I would not have known which was which.
No.
But because the allotment contracts allow for rabbits, I couldn't turn down the opportunity that my garden isn't big enough to have that many rabbits at home. So yes, when I had the opportunity to have them at the allotment, it's like, yes, I'm gonna do it because I have the opportunity.
Yeah. And talking about space, I mean, if you want to raise meat and you've got a limited space, there's not very much that's going to get you more meat bang for your square meter buck than rabbits, is there?
Absolutely, yes. They are definitely the most space efficient and just the easiest, because you don't need an incubator. The mama rabbit does all the hard work, and you just have to separate them and do the hard bits when it comes to it.
Yeah. So before we talk about the actual culling, which is obviously most people's first question, is, you know, how do you do it? But before we get to that, something you've mentioned a few times, and it's something I want to, the personal side of it, I just want to ask, you know, you clearly sort of have found it difficult in terms of the actual physical culling. You've found it, you know, difficult emotionally or psychologically, or however you want to describe it, but it's not something that you have found easy. And I just wonder what makes you do it when, you know, you're facing something you don't want to do. What makes you do it anyway? What's the drive behind that?
The drive behind it is wanting to eat meat that I know where it's come from, that I know how it's been raised, where it's been raised, what condition, what kind of life it's had, how long its life has been. And when you buy meat from a supermarket, you just don't know that. You might get the country of origin, but you just don't know where it's come from and what it's been through. I wanted that side of things. There's another side of it as well, and like yourself, I am somewhat in the mindset of the prepper. So having the skills to be able to look after myself and to be able to process my own meat, whether it's home raised or procured elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's something that had been on my mind for a while as if it ever came to it, I could do rabbits, yes.
Yes.
But there's one thing thinking about it and thinking, oh yes, that'd be fine, and a different thing actually doing it.
Yeah, actually having the experience under your belt.
Yes, having the experience, having the skills, and yeah, just having the knowledge of how to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, like those two sides to it for my motivation.
So and when you say about having the skills of how to do it, there really is, in my opinion, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about tiny animals, you know, whether it's fish, whether it's quail, or whether it's pigs, that there's really two very distinct sets of skills and two very distinct elements to it, and that is the culling, the slaughtering, and then the butchering, and they're two very, very different things that require different skills entirely. So perhaps we'll go on next to that and talk about the actual culling you know, you've mentioned quail, you've mentioned ducks, but really we're going to be mostly focusing on rabbits today. And you know, so what is the process there? Having you're talking to someone who's never actually done it, so how do you humanely cull a rabbit?
Well, the process is actually the same for all three of them. You have to follow the guidelines from the Humane Slaughter Society. Humane Slaughter Association, and they say that for poultry and for rabbits, it's neck dislocation.
Mm-hmm.
So another term that you might come across is cervical dislocation. So basically creating a gap in the vertebrae of the neck. And the most common way to do that is the broomstick technique. So the broomstick technique is basically a stick, and you lay the stick across the back of the animal's neck, put your feet on either side of the stick, hold onto its feet, and stand up very quickly.
Yeah.
And that breaks the neck and is very much an instant kill, and very clean and as humane as I think it can be, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And how did you learn that?
YouTube.
Yeah. No, it's a great resource.
It really is.
And then the next step, obviously, in this two-part process is the butchering. So perhaps you could talk us through that.
Obviously, it's different from poultry to rabbits. I actually find the rabbits better and easier to do than the poultry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ducks, you have to put your hand in a deep, dark cavity of horrible, gribbly things and pull stuff out, which is not nice. but with the rabbits, you basically hang them up by their back feet on, I use baler twine that's got little slip knots at the end, and put a foot in each, and then you cut the fur from around the back feet and peel it down and just kind of peel it all off downwards.
Yeah.
And then it's just a matter of opening a slit in the tummy and just cutting everything out with a knife.
Yeah.
For me, I do that at the allotment, and my cleanup crew are waiting very eagerly for the innards. So that's the chickens and the ducks. You can't believe how keen ducks are on intestines. so it's nice to know that it's not going to waste.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the heads of the rabbits go to my German Shepherd, and he absolutely adores rabbit. So he gets the feet and the heads. I just have a hose pipe set up to wash it all down once I've taken all the bits out. I tend to save the kidneys and the liver and sometimes the hearts. Although they are stacking up in my freezer because I haven't worked out what I'm doing with them yet. I need to learn how to cook with those.
Yeah, yeah, that's a whole separate issue, isn't it?
Well, they say that an animal deserves a good life, a good death, and a good chef. I'm not very good at the last bit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But I'm working on it.
Yeah, well, it's all a continuum. It's all a learning process that never ends. So you have to enjoy the learning, otherwise you can't do any of these things.
Yes. You asked about motivation as well. To make sure that I do actually go through with the bits I don't want to go through with, I've set myself the challenge for the year of not eating any meat that I have not grown or culled myself.
Wow, so, is that the calendar year of 2021?
It is, yes.
So so far so good?
Yeah, so far so good, yeah. No problems.
Well done.
The only major problem I did think about was when I visited my in-laws' house and was going to eat with them, but I managed to...
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
I managed to slip her a frozen rabbit in advance. And
as you do,
at least one received the treatment of a good chef.
Fantastic.
Because it was absolutely excellent.
Fantastic. So how easy is it to actually breed these rabbits?
Very. They pretty much do it themselves without much intervention.
Sure.
If they're being kept together, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole process of, you know, looking after them and everything that's associated with it.
I mean, so many people have kept pet rabbits, and it's like any other small animal. It's you get the housing right, you get the feed right, and work wise, I come to the allotment twice a day to feed all the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if the weather is really hot, then I will come down on a lunchtime to make sure that they've not run out of water, because that can be a problem. But it's very, very straightforward. My rabbits, I started off in a colony setting, so they were all in together. As I said, the shed that I had was an old pigeon loft, mm-hmm. And it was like two lofts divided into two kind of 4 meter by 1.5 meter bays. So really big sheds, have good light as well. So they weren't in the gloomy shed where one of them has got half of the roof. We've actually put clear plastic on, so they've got loads of light in there.
Yeah.
Yes, we did keep them all in together originally. The person that I got the rabbits from was a little bit concerned about that, because she, I think she understood a bit more about the uncontrolled breeding. hutches that were 8 foot by 2 foot. For one rabbit. For one rabbit, yes. I know she had her males. They had an external run as well, and their night hutches, they had that. And I assume her females were in a similar size hutch. I don't know how that works out for when you've got seven little ones in there as well, but. So they're very, very family orientated, so they probably get on just fine. I didn't want to have a massive cost outlay initially in case it didn't work out.
Of course.
So I decided to just put them all in together in the shed and see what happened. They were only babies when I got them all. Two of them were sisters, and the buck was from an unrelated male.
Yeah.
And they just grew up together, and they were just so super happy together. But it did mean I had no idea when they'd got to the point where they'd done any of the business that we needed them to do, any breeding. So we prepared the nest boxes and just put the nest boxes in with them just in case. And one day when we went down there, there was spots of blood and fur, big pile of fur, and it happened.
So
So I just want to take a moment and say thank you. Thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate every single one of you who downloads and listens to the show. There's lots of ways that you can help the show grow and support it. And probably one of the best ones is just to share it with someone. Find someone who you think might be interested in this content and say, listen, here's a show that I like. I think you might like it too. And point them in our direction. We would be forever grateful. If you want to go a step further, you could also become a patron. You can do that by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub and set up to donate a small monthly amount. If you think this podcast is worth the price of a cup of coffee a month, then you can set it at that amount. And obviously, anyone who chooses to do that, we are eternally grateful to.
So how long after getting them home did you have your first litter?
Probably about 7 months.
A little while then. Little while.
It was a little while, yes. So okay. Yeah, when you see them twice a day for that long, it does come as a sudden surprise when they're suddenly babies.
Yeah. How many litters have you had in total so far?
I didn't look that one up.
Roughly, probably
about six.
Okay. Over how long a period?
Probably 8 months, maybe.
Okay.
It was too many. They produced faster than I was expecting. Yes. I mean, they say breeds like rabbits, of course, but when, as a child, I bred gerbils, if I kept the male and the female in together and they had litter after litter after litter, the first litter was large, then there were fewer in the next litter, and then there were hardly any in the last litter.
Yeah.
So I was working on the principle that if the rabbits stayed in together and were bred pretty much continuously,
they'd
follow a similar pattern and have fewer each time. I was wrong. And I ended up with a lot of rabbits in very short order. And yes, eventually Basil, my buck, got evicted from the colony.
Yeah.
We haven't actually put him back in with the females since, because we're still trying to catch up with all the babies that have been produced so far.
Yeah.
And I've still got, I think today's count, still got 20 rabbits. So
that are obviously and 17 of those are in due for processing.
Yes, I've done four this morning. But yes, I've pretty much got two litters worth that are ready now.
And how long do they take to? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No,
please carry on. Well, how long do they take to actually get to size?
Well, commercially, it would be 12 weeks. Because. There's the whole getting up to a reasonable size on the minimum amount of food is what the commercial growers would aim for. And that is achieved at around 12 weeks. But to me, they're still tiny at 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So I tend to leave them more towards the 20-week mark. And they're much bigger at that point. Now,
do you have a problem
depend.
With the males becoming fertile?
I did at one point, and I had to act on that pretty sharpish. But now I've got the two bays separated off, so the mature males are in one, and the females are still in with the mums.
Are they easy to sex?
No. I wouldn't say so. You do get the hang of it. I've worked it out now, but no, it is quite tricky. There's definitely easier animals to sex. Obviously, once they get a bit bigger, they're easier.
Sure. You can sex them in time.
You can, yes. Now I know what I'm looking for. I have had a good look at 4-week-old kits, and I'm pretty confident that yes, actually, I can tell what's what. Okay. So,
and how do you tell?
They say one of them has got a little kind of O shape because they've both got protrusions.
Yeah.
And one of them's got an opening just at the end, and one of them, the opening kind of goes down the side.
Like a keyhole shape.
It looks like a taco.
Okay.
They call it the taco shapes. One's more like a volcano, where it's like goes up smoothly with a little and with a kind of O at the top. And the other one is like the volcano, but it's got a slit down the side.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So, but you have to press on them in the right way to make it protrude to be able to see it properly. And if you don't push on it in the right way, it can look like the other sex.
Sure. And again, I'm guessing that YouTube is the place to go to kind of learn this.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, there's loads of help online for that.
So what are you feeding them and watering them with? And, you know, what's the requirements?
I give pellets and free access to hay at all times. Now, the breeder I got them from said an adult has 2 egg cups worth of pellets twice a day. But my adults have been largely in with babies that are growing. How much does a grower need, like at each stage of its life? So I'm probably horrendously overfeeding mine because I'm trying to make sure that everyone's got enough, and I'm more worried about them going hungry. But they should have like a certain amount of pellets, and then the rest of their hunger should be filled up with hay. I'm probably spending a lot more on food than I should be. So I do need to do the maths on it and work it out a bit more scientifically.
So what is the cost?
I looked at last month's cost when I had 24 rabbits, and it was pellet wise, I think it cost me about £50 for the month.
Okay, so that's 50 pence a week per rabbit, roughly. That's not too bad.
Basil, my male who's outside, he doesn't seem to eat much at all. He does have access to grass out in his run. So I don't know if he's topping up on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, plus he's not producing milk or anything else, is he?
Well, exactly. He's fully grown. And not producing milk. So yes, he's not eating a huge amount.
Awesome. So just trying to think where we go from here. What sort of breeds are available? Because, well, not sort of breeds are available, but if we're going to breed specifically for meat, one of the things that felt like a little bit of a minefield for me was actually finding the right type of rabbit. I can find all sorts of rabbits around me for sale and free to a good home, but I couldn't find any that were kind of the right type of rabbit for raising for meat. So what are the right types?
Yeah, well, my initial thought was the Flemish Giant, because they're the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
From research on them, they grow incredibly slowly and eat a lot of pellets, getting up to size.
Yeah.
So the recommended, from what research I did, was the New Zealand White. But there's also the Californian, and I think there's Giant Papillonian, and there's quite a few other large breeds that work. I was trying to get hold of New Zealand Whites and found it quite difficult to find any, but I did in my hunting find a reasonably local meat breeder who had mixed breed rabbits, just referred to them as meat mutts, and I think hers had Californian, Continental Giant and New Zealand White in the bloodline, so it was a bit of a crossbreed. They are very large rabbits, but they do also grow pretty fast.
And what did they cost?
Mine came, they had 2 vaccinations done by the breeder, and they were £60 each with the 2 vaccinations.
So no, I would suggest that's not cheap, is it?
It's not cheap.
No. I suppose it's very, very cheap when you look at it as a long-term meat production in terms of, you know, if you add up the long-term amount of meat per kilogram, it's incredibly cheap. But in terms of an actual per animal cost for a small animal like that, that strikes me as a bit more than I would have expected. But
the real problem comes for vaccination time, because we have three rabbit diseases wild in the country. Most people know of myxomatosis, but there is RHDV 1 and 2, which is rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus. And my rabbits only had two of the vaccinations, because the breeder did them herself, because it's more effective if you have 10 to 12 rabbits to buy in the vaccines and distribute it yourself. But she couldn't get hold of one of them. So mine were vaccinated against those two. Now they're due to be vaccinated again. And I've gone to the vet, because I've only had three rabbits that I actually want to vaccinate. And the vet is quoting £51 a rabbit for the annual vaccinations.
Wow.
And the breeder did actually recommend that they were done every 6 months, but the vets say just every year. So yes, if you're thinking about your three rabbits costing that much a year to vaccinate, that actually makes them sound less expensive to buy, because I'm getting £50 worth of vaccinations almost. For my £60 rabbit.
Yeah, no, that's incredible.
So, that the ongoing cost if you want to keep them healthy. But I suppose it depends on how you're keeping them. I was going to ask that actually.
If I were to keep them, let's say I kept them just outside my house, I think I've only, as you will know, Vicky, we've got a massive garden, and I've only ever seen one rabbit in it, and quite a distance from the house, you know, right at the far end. So, you know, several hundred meters away. Rabbits in my little fenced in garden where our dogs run outside our kitchen, for example, I would say I genuinely am as pretty close to 100% sure as you can be that there are no rabbits that ever come in that garden. Would you consider not vaccinating in that instance or not?
You could give it a go. I have heard that some of the diseases actually are transmitted by flies.
Oh, okay.
I've not actually double checked that, but I did consider putting them in an area where there was scaffolding netting, so it would stop any flies getting near them. But I do have wild rabbits that come onto my plot, so it's definitely I can't consider not vaccinating.
No, absolutely.
But yes, if you were in an area free from wild rabbits, then yes, you might get away with it.
Sure. But buyer beware, I suppose, and do your own research.
I'd certainly never actively recommend people don't vaccinate their animals.
No, not at all. So what else do we need to know about the actual process of keeping rabbits, or have we covered everything?
Well, water-wise, they can either have a bottle, the standard bottle, or a dish. I've actually found winter to be the most challenging. The water freezing over.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially down at the allotment, the taps often freeze.
Yeah.
So what I took to doing was I put up a small water butt in the shed with the rabbits. And on days where it was not icy, I'd make sure that the water butt was filled up so that I could then make sure that all the water dishes were filled up as easily as possible, and hope that the taps defrosted before I ran out of water. And so that was a challenge over winter. But the only other real consideration when keeping rabbits is... what my breeder told me was the advice was, don't tell people what you're doing, because the culture in this country is rabbits are friends, not food.
For sure.
And she made what she refers to as a mistake of telling people that she was raising raising rabbits for meat, and came up with quite a lot of abuse.
It's an odd thing, isn't it? Because rabbits been eaten since, you know, since before people can even remember anything. You know, rabbits have been a part of the, you know, the heritage of food on these islands and all around the world.
Absolutely.
For millennia. And it's not even something that, if you're not talking about raising your rabbits, if you're talking about the idea of eating rabbit, it's something that's actually a fairly... It's not necessarily as common as a lot of other things insofar as people eating it, but the idea that people do eat rabbit isn't one that's alien to people, is it? You know, when they talk about game meat, and it does seem quite strange how there is, and I completely agree with you, how there is this, like, this huge barrier around raising your own rabbits versus, you know, all the other things that we eat.
It's an odd thing. Everyone expects it, like chickens. People would not be too surprised if you raised chickens and ate chickens, but rabbit comes as a bit of a shock to people.
Yeah, and even more ironically, the higher end a restaurant you went to, the more likely you think to see something like rabbit on the menu, wouldn't you?
Yes.
It's such an odd dichotomy.
My local butchers do sell rabbit legs.
Yeah.
So I did try rabbit meat before getting into raising them. My dad, as a child, his parents had meat rabbits. It's not something he was involved with at that age, but he grew up with meat rabbits being a thing for his generation. If I talk to people in the village I live in, the older generation, yes, quite a few of them used to keep meat rabbits.
I think Watership Down's got a lot to answer for.
yes.
Cute cartoon rabbits.
They are absolutely adorable, and they're lovely to cuddle, and they do make lovely pets. It's possibly not my ones. They are huge, and I certainly wouldn't recommend a meat rabbit for a child's pet, because they're just so large, and they have got sharp claws, and they can do quite a lot of damage when they kick off to try and jump down and scratch your arms.
So you've done quail, and you've done ducks and chickens, and now rabbits. And where are you going from here in terms far as, you know, raising meat? Are you just planning to sort of consolidate on what you've already learned, or are you going to be making changes? What's your plans from here?
Plans from here. I did set up a breeding plan for the year. I calculated, like, how many ducks, how many quail, how many rabbits I wanted for the year, and put up a schedule of when I need to put what in the incubator, and when I needed to put Basil in with one of the ladies, and when, because I hadn't worked out when ducks came in late. the first time of when the duck eggs were meant to go in the incubator went out the window straight away, and I still haven't got through all the rabbits from last season, so I'm not putting Basil in with the ladies yet. But yes, it's about working out what I actually need and how to raise them efficiently. I do think that now I will be building individual hutches for my two ladies, and putting them outside on the allotment where they can get some fresh grass as well, and keeping them separately. I did love it when they were all in as a family. They did look super cute all together, and they were very happy together, but it was absolutely out of control. cuteness, out of control with adorableness, yes. But... it wasn't sustainable. So yes, separate pens for the girls, definitely. And I would like to look at increasing the amount of home-raised meat that I give to my dog as well. So working out how you go about raw feeding, what he needs nutritionally, and how that would affect my breeding plan. So that's where I'm going, rabbits and poultry wise. But I'll thank you for this one. I'm also getting goats.
Yay!
So a horse paddock that is part of the allotment site became available. And I applied for it and a change of use from horses to goats. And they have just, after a lot of fighting, agreed to let me have it.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And it's a great deal you've got there as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. I'm getting half an acre of land for £200 a year. So
fantastic. I'm so thrilled for you.
It's absolutely incredible because where I live is in the middle of a housing estate with a small garden. And you could very easily think that, well, I can't do anything here. I'll just save up the money for when I'm much, much older and can afford a small holding.
Yeah.
But if you really dig around and look around in your local area, it's amazing what you can find and that could be available.
Yeah.
We're also looking at getting bees.
Yeah.
Bees are not allowed on our allotment site yet, but now I have got permission for the goats.
You've seen a door cracked open.
They're fed up with me when I go bouncing back to them and say, "Hi, can I have bees, please?"
the goats you're getting, are they going to be milking goats?
They are. Yes.
I'm so excited for you, Vicky.
yes. I'm thinking two females, and hope for the rentability.
Yeah. Yeah,
if I can do that,
I'm sure you'll be able to find one. And I'm so excited for you because, I feel like I've got to know you a little bit, and I just know how much you are going to get out of having milking goats, and I just think it's going to enrich your life so much, and everything that you are sort of working towards and you know, all the things that you're passionate about and believe in. I just think that milking goats are going to just serve this huge purpose in that.
Yes.
And I'm just so excited for you.
Yes, and I'm really looking forward to I was watching you carting all your milking equipment out to the field.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, you know what, goats have legs. I could just take mine to the house. rather than carrying all the milking equipment to the goats, I could just take the goats home, and then on my quiet little cul-de-sac housing estate, be in the front garden milking goats on my driveway.
Yeah, fantastic.
I did love watching The Good Life as a child. It's So yes, I'm sure the Tom and Barbara comments will be thick and fast in coming if I end up milking a goat on my driveway.
Yeah, you get used to them though, don't worry.
Be good fun. And I did wonder if I could get a little cart for the goats and actually have a cart that the kids can go in and
have a ride around
the village.
Yeah, I've often toyed with that idea. I've never gone any further than that, but training our Billy to pull a cart would be quite the thing.
Do it. That'd be hilarious.
It would.
Doing the school run with the goat cart.
Yeah. Then you get all kinds of comments.
I get a couple of chariots and the kids can have races. Yes. the options are endless.
They are. So is there anything else that we haven't touched on, Vicky, that you feel that we've missed or that you'd like to cover before we start wrapping up?
No. I think the most important thing is, if you are going to think about raising meat, it's the knowing your why. Why are you doing it? Why do you want to do it?
Uh-huh.
Because it's not a cheap option.
No.
It's absolutely, definitely a lot more expensive than buying meat from a supermarket.
Uh-huh.
If you want to raise them in the best possible way. But the quality is definitely better. And you know their history, and you know you've done right by them.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yes.
Ethically, for me, my why is, going to bed at night with a very clear conscience about the animals that have died for me to eat them, you know? That's my why for sure.
Yes. Excellent.
So if people have got any questions for you, they can check you out.
I'm usually lurking around the Self-Sufficient Hub Facebook page.
Fantastic.
So if anyone asked a question on there, I'd probably be able to answer that.
Great. So I'll what I'll do maybe is when this episode goes out is I'll start a post on the group there for people to come and say hi and maybe follow up with any questions they might have after today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for your time, Vicky. It's been a real pleasure, and hopefully you'll be back on the show at some point in the future to maybe fill us in on everything that you've done between now and then.
Oh yes, yeah, definitely. The saga awesome. Of the goats. Sure, that'll be fun. Yeah. Right, awesome. Well, thank you very much for having me on.
No, my pleasure. Thank you, Vicky. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.